But have you ever thought about what it means to be grown up? I mean, where's the line? What are we striving for? I mean, have we even grown up? How do we know that we're mature? I mean, is it finishing school, learning a trade, getting a job, getting a house, having a family? I mean, what is the line? It's something we don't talk
about. Our children are leaving the faith in droves.
As a result.
Oh, I got to pause here.
We're going live right now.
How can we raise our kids to stand firm, have a faith that lasts, and navigate such a time as this?
Our nation's capital has just been...
To turn a nation, you have to take the next generation.
Today in the news, COVID-19 numbers.
I'm Jake McCandless, and this is my podcast, Stand Firm Parents. We're working together to help our children have a faith that lasts.
And now, here's Jake McCandless.
This is Stand Firm Parents, a parents podcast, which means we're talking about, in a sense, how to raise our children. But have you ever thought about what it means to be grown up? I mean, where's the line? What are we striving for? I mean, have we even grown up? How do we know that we're mature? I mean, is it finishing school, learning a trade, getting a job, getting a house, having a family? I mean, what is the line? It's something we don't talk about. I mean, think about, you can go back in your school career and you talked about what you wanted to be when you grew up, which I'd love to hear some of your things that you were saying third, fourth, fifth grade of what you wanted to be when you grew up. Please drop that in the comments, wherever that is. I'd love to hear that. I was not saying podcast host at that time myself. I wanted to be a coach at that time. Anyway, moving ahead, how do we know? It's just something we don't really talk about. Well, we are in this episode. So in this episode, we're continuing several conversations. Of course, there's the ongoing conversation of how do we help our families have a faith that lasts and stand firm? Within that, we're having a longer discussion about developing a fully integrated faith into ourselves and our families, which if we do that, if we integrate faith, there's a much greater chance we're going to stand firm and walk faithfully. And then within that discussion, this is the fourth episode talking about what we can learn from brain science, how brain scans have revealed how the brain works. And from that, we can begin to learn what we can do to better grow spiritually. Mature, there's that word again. So we've been talking about a book called The Other Half of Church. I've been visiting with both the authors, both co-authors. First, Michael Hendricks, and then Dr. Jim Wilder in the previous episode. And we ended that episode teasing about his new book. His new book deals with growing up, deals with maturity, and deals with it on all levels. And it seems like a textbook parents probably need to have. That's why we're going to continue this conversation. So we're talking brain science still, but we're adding to that the understanding of maturity and moving towards maturity. So let's dive right in. Dr. Jim Wilder is a psychologist with extensive clinical hours. He is the chief neurotheologian for Life Model Works, which is a very cool title, by the way. We talked about that in the previous episode. He's authored several books, and he has a new one that we're going to talk about now. And it's not just one book. It's actually three books. It's a bundle called Growing a More Human Community. It talks about maturity on all different levels. Dr. Wilder, I am honored we can continue this conversation. Again, I want to jump into it. You are shedding a lot of new light on maturity, again, on so many different levels. Tell us a bit of the journey towards this new book bundle.
The thing that started it for me was probably the Christian men's movement back in the 1980s, something like that, when I realized I had no idea what was good about being a man or a Christian or especially a father. And I had little kids, and I'm thinking, like, okay, what is a father good for? And I realized all the way through graduate school and seminary, I'd never had even one lecture, not even a class, just one lecture on the topic of, you know, what were men good for and what were fathers good for? And we had all these things, you know, that mothers were good for, and it was like everything was their fault, of course. So, yes, and in psychology too, you know, I mean, Freud, the thing then was, well, who are we and what are we created to be? And this is such a mystery to me, especially with little kids that I care about, that I sort of had to kind of explore that and start talking about the topic. And eventually I hit 49, and I thought, you know, this is a jubilee year when you're supposed to not work. So I took that year off and I wrote everything I could think of about what it meant to grow up and be the kind of person that God meant you to be at every age. And that's how this started. And then, you know, the last few years, the world has sort of come unglued, you know, what to be a man, what's a woman, what our family's for. If we were confused 25 years ago, it's nothing like what we've got going on now. So I thought, I need to really update what I wrote back then to fit the current situation. Like, how do I develop me? What's me? And that's the first book, you know, the growing infant and child stage of maturity to become a person. And then how do I become an adult? Because I got the Gen Zers saying, you know, adulting, I don't know how to do that. And then become a parent, which is even more alarming than becoming an adult. So many of them are deciding not even to be parents.
Right.
And then the how do you develop a community and grow a community? And that was then the third book, becoming We the People. Because it seems like from one end to the other, God was intent on creating a people, not just, you know, saving individuals, but creating people that could, you know, the odd thing about people, we're created in God's image, but we're the only creature that can also create someone who's in God's image. We can pass it on to our kids, and we don't want to pass on a crumpled picture, but we all do. So how do we deal with it?
I have to admit, it wasn't until reading your book and beginning to have this conversation with you that it just really hits me just how important it is to understand emotional maturity. In our last conversation, you defined maturity as continuing to be yourself in tough situations or to stay in relationship in tough situations. And then you said spiritual maturity then is in tough situations, continuing to keep that relationship with God. I think probably like many listening and watching, I've always separated, you know, really kind of, you've got your spiritual life here, your physical life, which I didn't even know so much about an emotional life, but that there was a great gulf. And so the most important thing is to get to spiritual maturity. But in how you've defined it, you can't. And that just really shows you can't have the spiritual maturity without the emotional maturity, which shows just how important this conversation again is. So I'm just curious, like in life previously, what are some of the signposts that we see to help us know that we're moving along in track of maturing?
Well, signposts are extremely confusing right now because most people are trying to figure out who they are, especially younger people, by locating some group on the internet that is as close to their set of problems as possible. So actually identifying by wounds, problems, and things that they're upset about. And so if we can find everybody else who is upset about the treatment of cows, that will be my identity group, and that's who I'll, you know, come to be like. I mean, pick any particular thing. What we actually need is somebody who can see what God wants to grow in us. The funny thing about our identity in the brain is that it's made up of mirror neurons, and mirror neurons are something that resonate with what we see, but until they're activated, we don't know that they're there. The brain can't even look at itself and say, this is who I am. In fact, Dr. Alan Shore, who's one of the big brain scientists that I follow, said we're unable to see ourselves. The way we know who we are is in the eyes of another person. How do other people see us is what our brain is configured to know. And so, you know, the question is, can anybody see in me what God sees in me? And my experience of going to church and being a Christian was that all the things about me that I had doubts about, I didn't bring to church. They got my performance self,
yeah,
but not the ones that I needed sorting out. And so what we needed is a Christian experience where we said, bring what you're confused about here to church, and we'll help you see what God sees in that. And that wasn't my experience, but it's what happens in families. In families, you know, you try to get your kids to talk about what happened in school today. Why? Well, part of it's a good thing, but also you hope that if there's anything they're confused about, they'll bring it home and we can talk about that and figure out who you really are. And so if you don't have a family meal, which so many people don't anymore, you know, when do these interactions happen? Well, screens get in the way, and, you know, and so we're not having this interaction to sort it out, and there's really no context to do that unless we deliberately turn it around. You know, the Great Commission to go and make disciples? You're talking about discipling in our previous show.
Yes.
Jesus says, go make disciples of you, copies of yourself. He does, and then he says, and teach them what I've done. We think we're making disciples of Jesus. No, the brain doesn't work that way, and neither does Jesus expect us to. We make copies of ourselves, and as Paul said, I want you to follow me the way I follow Christ. We have to have somehow built that disciple in us good enough to pass on to others. And so we need people upstream from us, people who have another piece of it, because we're all got just pieces, right? We got another piece of it, and we can pass that on. So again, when I got started, I went and talked to other dads. I said, you know, what's the most rewarding thing to you about being a dad? And they would look at me like, can we talk about this? We wanted to get better at fishing. We'd talk about what's the best part of fishing, what do we do wrong, right? We want to get better at football, we do the same thing. We want to get better at cars, whatever it was. We talk about it, and you look at our wives, they're all talking about what they screwed up during the day and what was the best part of the day for being mothers. But we don't have that conversation over here. And let me just throw something on the table. You know, yesterday I tried this with my kids. I thought, well, after they get their baths, I'm going to do this. And they just didn't like go for it at all. You know, like, any of you got a better idea how to make that fly? And, you know, again, I remember the guys looking at each other going, can we talk about this? I don't know. We can talk about this. It was this, you know, bewildered look, not about the topic, but whether it could actually be shared in community to become better fathers. Suppose we did the same thing with being Christians. Hey, I tried to be Christian the other day when I went, you know, I got in the slowest line at the bank. Man, the teller was so crabby, and I just, you know, I just got mad. Is there a more Christian way to do the slow?
But we don't tend to show our weaknesses. We rarely do, or at least I don't. I'm going to point the finger at me, but we don't.
So we don't get better.
And
we don't make disciples of us. We try to get people who know the same ideas we do, but they can't handle them in real life. And that's, again, this practice of maturity is being able to stay connected with Jesus, who, by the way, is always there. I remember that my computer stopped working at some point, and I wanted to contact, some computer guy, right?
Yeah.
And it occurred to me, Jesus is actually here. I wonder if he knows anything about computers.
Knows everything, right?
That's what part of my brain said. The other side is, he's absolutely useless when it comes to computers. I mean, it was this interesting fight going inside my head. Does he actually know anything about that? Well, yeah, no, it's pointless to ask him. You know, does he know what's going on inside my daughter? Is he going to be any help right now? This is the spiritual maturity right there. You know, can I bring him into whatever it is that's going on?
That's right. Exactly. And that's one of the main themes we talk about here on this podcast, is talking about, as parents, we're disciple makers. And so we're always trying to point him to Jesus. And I guess, in a sense, that's calling them to follow us as we follow him. But we've talked about it in both episodes so far, is it seems like we jump to performance mode over a real mode when it comes to Christianity. And so if we are copying ourselves anyway, then it's most likely the performance mode, right? The mode with the mask.
This idea of copying oneself, man, that sounds scary. And But I also see.
What we do with kids, right?
Right. I mean, yeah. Because one of the main things we talk about on here is being disciple makers in our home. Mm-hmm. And of course, we're always pointing to lead them to follow Christ. Oh, that to follow us. But we've talked about it in each episode that we jump to that performance mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like if we are doing much of that in Christianity today, it is more copying the performance mode versus the real mode.
Exactly so. And that's why the next generation turns around and say, well, it's not who you really are and who actually believes or wants the performance. So I'm out of here. It's the downside of performance is that it's not very contagious.
You've provided background. So we've been doing this for, I've been doing it for 2 or 3 years, been doing it investigatively, like how do we help our kids have a faith that lasts? And mm-hmm. research, the number one thing is having dinner together with family, mm-hmm. not even mm-hmm. talking faith. And you've brought that up in each episode we've talked about. And mm-hmm. the second one, when people were asked, or you know, young people were asked why they left, it was because the church played it too safe, or the church wouldn't tackle larger problems that they, you know, that's out there.
I love what you're saying. So I've been doing this for a few years, trying to do it I love what you're saying. I've been doing this a few years, trying to do it investigatively, asking this question, how do we help our kids stand firm? How do we, you know, give them this faith that lasts? And from the statistics of why kids stay, it comes back to the dinner table. One of the things you mentioned, it's like you're reading my notes. And the other side of this, well, why do they leave? Well, the number one thing, I believe is Barna's research, talked about the church playing it too safe. And closely related to that, the church not tackling some big issues out there, which produces the response that you just said. Following generations look at it and say, hey, you know, this doesn't fit. I mean, this isn't really what I want. And as you just said, it's not as contagious. I love that.
Yeah, that's the maturity aspect. Can I stay connected with you and with God while things are happening, while things are going on, while especially the unpleasant feelings, there's six of them wired into the brain, you know, sad, angry, depressed, disgusted, hopeless, shame, and fear, I think I named all six. And if I can manage to stay connected with you and God during all those things, I can face all the problems in the world and in families. But usually my parents didn't know at least one of those, maybe several. And when my Christianity gets to that point, I can no longer be engaged. So I have to either switch to a performance or let some reactive part of my brain take over. And that's not impressing the next generation. The other thing that I would add to the list you just said is that it appears from some of the research I've read that if they don't have a personal interactive experience with Jesus after age 15 or 16, they're going to drift away from the faith. It's like these are ideas, but they're not a present reality.
Right.
And so part of what we have to demonstrate is how do we have a present reality when things are going wrong in our relationship where we go like, wow, we're really having a bad fight here. How about we stop and get Jesus in this one right here?
Yes, exactly. And that hits a little too home. We just recently had a family retreat, got away to a cabin for a few days. And I mean, it was time just to hang out, to be together, get away from things, but also do some Bible study. And so along the way, I was filming some video clips to show through Stand Firm and just tell the story of what we were doing and try to pass that on. And so the last reel I made was a video where I said, parents, now at the end, don't blow it. I was throwing the trash away, shooting this video, and just talking about, hey, you have these great times, but just so quickly you can get frustrated and blow it. And we get home, and what do? Yeah, I blow it. Oh, so yeah, you stepped on my toes on that one. And it seems like you're talking about consistency between conviction and how we express that.
Oh, so much I'd love to dive into with you. Again, we're pushing our time, but I want to make sure to get to this question. In your new book bundle, you talk about really the stages of maturity. Could you walk us through a bit of that?
Yeah, that's the first thing we did when we were trying to figure out what it was look like to be, to live an abundant life. That's how we started this. You know, what does the godly abundant life look like? And we realized the scripture talked about different categories of people, and there were the infants, babies, there were children, there were adults, parents, and elders. And when we went to look at all the languages of the world that we could study, they all had those same characteristics. And then the brain science came along in the 1990s and said, the brain goes through distinct changes at each of those points where it actually reconfigures itself to run differently as an infant, a child, an adult, about 13, a parent, and a grandparent. And you actually have brain changes that happen associated with all of those. So we thought, wow, every culture in the world that we know of has different words for that. The Bible talks about those people differently. Brain science tells us that your brain rewires itself for each of these stages. And, you know, Paul makes it clear that while they're each glorious, we should be eager to move on to the next stage, which is more complicated. It's got everything the previous one does, but we've just added some new things to it. So an infant, which is the first 4 years of life, is basically learning what I need and how to take care of myself. They don't know how to do anything. And the world is theirs to eat, and they have to learn you can't eat the world. Some things you have to wait for, and not everything goes in your mouth. So it's not all about you. Then childhood, 4 to 12, 13, something like that, is how I learn to navigate the world on my own and take care of me. Now that I know what I need, let's do it with the world, you know, make it portable. So, you know, I have to learn to take my jacket with me and my hat and my lunch and whatever else it is, and get myself to the bathroom on my own, all these kind of, you know, important things. Because if you can't take care of one, you can't take care of two or three or five or something like that. Adult, your brain rewires itself, so no longer is my own identity the most important. The survival of my group becomes more important than my own. So now I have to take care of all the other people that are part of my group and select one of those to be a partner. And then we'll go on to have be parents, the next stage, where we'll actually start this cycle over again with little babies who have no idea who they are, and we'll make a copy of ourselves, including all the upgrades that we had from our group. Because, you know, a family has got so much. A group has to upgrade you to have more skills than your family might have given you. So a church should be part of saying, yes, let's teach you who you are. Let's see you the way Jesus does. And then we'll teach you as a child to see yourself the way Jesus sees you. And then as an adult, we'll teach you how to see in each other what Jesus sees in there under all kinds of conditions. Then you can start doing that with, you know, this raw material you get with your kids. And then if you do this really well for your kids and all their friends and all of that, we'll let you really do that for the community as well. Tell us who we are. And that's when you become an elder. And, you know, grandparents are usually the first stage of that. But that's the progression. And if each stage we're including on the normal human maturity an extra stage that says, and how's God involved in all of this, so that we can see that and follow it and in real time, then we've got spiritual maturity as well as just normal human maturity.
And in your book, you talk about even though we may age out of some of these stages, you know, we're out of that area of life, that we may have not grown emotionally with our age. Maybe something hung us up during that time. So even though we're older, more mature physically and age-wise and where we are in life, emotionally, we may still be hung up back at a prior stage.
And that's why we made a list of the things that were needed, because most people actually are trying to get to the next stage and it's just not working for them and they sort of give up after a while. And it almost always turns out to be that one of the things you needed in order to make that work was missing. So I remember one person who was really good at math and would work with kids and go like, you know, they hated math. And I said, well, tell us what you know to do. And they would find out that some part of what makes math work had never been taught to this child. So every time they tried it, it was just like a hopeless mess. They go, oh, you're missing how to do this. You don't understand this, so let's teach that to you. And then all of a sudden math made sense. Well, maturity is the same way. If you're just going blindly, going like, I have no idea what I need to know in order to do the next stage, it's kind of freaks you out if you're a responsible person. So this part of the making a map is, what do we need to do? Part of it is ourselves, and what part of it the community has to provide, because, you know, the next stage of maturity is actually something we don't yet know how to do. And one of the myths in American society is if you just leave all the kids alone and don't expect anything of them, they'll just discover for themselves who they really are and do it really well. And actually what you just created is just total confusion.
Yeah, you're going to get anarchy or something like that, Lord of the Flies type thing. So thank you for breaking that down. And so we may physically be maturing age-wise, but emotionally we may be held back. And one of the things that hangs us up may be a trauma from the past and the repercussions from that. And one of the things that you address is that we may have to go backwards, even though we're older, even though we're in another stage, go back and address that to move forward emotionally.
Yeah, trauma basically is your brain has come to the conclusion there's something you can't handle, so you have to avoid it. So you have to go back and say, well, how would I learn to handle this thing? And then after that, you know, you're not afraid of handling it. It may be, demanding, but, you know, if every time you put me up to bat, I, you know, miss the ball and I just struck out over and over again. After a while, I don't want to go to bat, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
So you teach me how to hit the ball, and all of a sudden now it becomes a challenge instead of a failure. And that's what we need to do back with maturity is go like, okay, let's put the challenge back into it. Here's what was missing. Let's get you good at this and move you on to the next stage. And that's what elders and communities are supposed to do. Families are supposed to do that when their kids are, you know, striking out. And, you know, when we have a map, it's easier to look at that. I remember going to one church and they handed every man in the church, it was a men's retreat, the list of the about, I think it was 11 things that you need to know as an infant maturity. And they said, have you got them all? And if you don't, we'll assign one of the other men in the church who's got it to teach you how to do it. Within 2 years, there was this huge turnaround in people who were stuck because they helped, you know, they had coaches now. They're
yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I know how to do that. And between the, you know, just the random mix of people in church, if you can call it random because God's behind it, right?
Right.
Just, you know, somebody knew how to do the things you didn't. And when we helped each other to do that, we actually, you know, went from being, I'm always a failure to, wow, that's a challenge, but I'm getting better.
So I started the episode talking about we don't really know what it means to grow up. We don't know when we're there or where we're going, and you've given us a map. Just absolutely incredible. Can you give us a practical step for parents, church leaders, as we try to implement this idea of maturity into our lives?
Well, I actually like the practical step that goes with the book, and that is simply find a list of the characteristics of maturity. LifeModelWorks.org, which is my organization, I think has one you can just download and look at, you know, for free, and just say, okay, which one of these don't I have? And usually most important are those six emotions. Which of the six emotions can I use to make relationships better? Can I make relationships better when I see someone sad? Most people can do that. And then, you know, go down, can I do that when they're afraid? Can I just go down? And if not, let me just say, you know, I don't know how to, when somebody is disgusting, I don't know what to do. Or if somebody is angry, I don't know what to do. Let me go find somebody that does. If we start to just share that with each other, I think very quickly we would start to see the failure places in our life are because we don't actually know how to do that, and we need somebody to help us get better at it. That's a starting point. We have to figure out our holes. And most people, when they realize that No one taught them what they needed to know. Instead of feeling discouraged about their lack of maturity, it's like, oh, well, that makes total sense. Now I can actually do something about
yes.
it. So
yes.
we need somebody to help us get better at it.
Yes. We have a map now, thanks to you. I mean, having that map, we can do that.
You know, we've got maps now. Let's use them. And, you know, I didn't have that when I was raising my kids. And it's sort of, for me, like, if I leave nothing behind me more than a map other people can follow, you know, it sort of redeems some of the bad experiences I had trying to, you know, find my way through the wilderness of maturity.
Dr. Wilder, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on here and to share. I just want to thank you for what you're doing, how you've invested your life, your writings, your work. And there'll be links to your books and links to Life Model Works. And all the things can be found in the notes wherever they are. Dr. Wilder, thank you.
I really bless what you're doing there with families because, you know, the interesting thing about the brain is even if we don't know the answer, and this even works for trauma, we don't know how to get out of this, but we know there is a way. Our brain begins to run the way it would if we did know the answer. It's like, okay, well, I know this is solvable. I'm not quite sure how it is yet, but I'm going to be up and running for this. It turns things up from impossible into challenges. And so your show is basically doing that for people, saying, you know, these things are possible. You may not be good at it yet. You might still be missing some things, but it is possible to be a good parent. It's good possible to be a good spouse. It's a good possible to be a good family. We don't know everything we need to know about it, but, you know, let's make it a challenge. And so I just really appreciate that, doing that for the everyone who's willing to participate. So bless you, Jake.
Hey, I'll take that.
You've been listening to Stand Firm Parents. Stand Firm Parents is a production of Stand Firm Ministries in partnership with LifeWord Studios, created by Jake McCandless and Brandon Harrington of Dime Collective. Again, thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe, share, and most importantly, stand firm.